Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We'll get to the death of Stephanie Tubbs Miller a little bit later in the program tonight. I just found out about it not that long ago. I mean, within the past few minutes. So we'll get to it. Young, I think she was, 53? I mentioned in my mini blog today at MikeMalloy.com or NovaMRadio.com about the, there's a new poll out that shows McCain, according to the Reuters news agency, McCain, a couple of percentage points ahead of Obama, you know, within the margin of error. All these polls are within the margin of error. And it still shows, like, what, maybe a third of the voters undecided. This is just astonishing to me. But McCain, with what, I think it was 46%, and Barack Obama was 41 or 42%. And, you know, this miraculous event occurred overnight or yesterday afternoon or, you know, I've warned you. I warned you yesterday about Tuesday afternoons. You got to be careful. But so there it was. Well, when I saw that today, you know, after choking on my Super Beans coffee and, you know, one of those bits. Thank God Molly was off with one of her friends today. She, you know, couldn't see Daddy having another, oh, Daddy's spewing coffee again. Ah. But after reading that article, you know, I just, that's why my little mini blog at the site today is kind of smart-assy and cheesy. And, you know, I think I used the term dumbass about six times. And, you know, just very much a juvenile piece of writing, I have to, after Kathy got it posted, you know, at both sites, you know, and I went back and read it again. I thought, oh, God, why do you do this? Why do you write this impulsive crap? And then, you know, Kathy posts it, and, you know, but I'll tell you what, in the moment, that's exactly how I felt. I cannot believe, I simply cannot believe that there are people who are old enough to vote in this country who really, honestly, truly, deeply believe that John McCain would be a better whatever the hell it is anymore than Barack Obama. Now, this is not, you know, I'm not throwing up a great big defense for Barack Obama, but of those two, there's no question. There's no question who would be the better executive. There's just no question. I don't know what President Obama is going to do with the executive powers that have been sucked into this little box and put on the desk in the Oval Office by the Bush crime family. I have no idea. Is he going to unlock the box and let all these furies fly away? Or is he going to sit there with the box and go, That's a lot. That's a lot of power. That's certainly a lot of power. So I don't know what he's going to do. But I do know what McCain will do. McCain is a freak. McCain is McCain. And I know I've been making the argument lately, you know, it doesn't make any difference which one. Well, in a certain sense, where it concerns creeping corporatism in the United States, I stand by the statement. In certain other areas, okay. Maybe you Democrats and Obamacons who have been emailing me and just, you know, just saying you're out of your mind. Maybe, you know, maybe you're right. I'm not claiming sanity. I work in talk radio. I have no way I can legitimately claim sanity. But McCain, in this poll, respondents, and I don't know if the respondents were likely voters or just people who were sober at the time, or I don't know, people who take methadone. I have no idea what the sampling was. But when I see something, I think, oh, Jesus God, this can't be. How many times do we have to be kicked in the face by the Republican Party? How many times before people will say, that's enough? Now, what is good, I saw a different poll today where Barack Obama has an almost 2-to-1 lead. Yeah, that big. If only people between the ages of 18 and, is it 39, are polled. The younger people in this country are coming out of the ether. Now, whether or not there's a chance that those numbers will slide a little bit to the over 50 crowd remains to be seen, but at least younger people. And I know, it's a celebrity thing. I know what the 18 to 39 generation is all about. I really do. You know, I've got three kids that are in that, four counting Molly. Well, no, she's not 18, you know, three who are in that group. And we talk, and I know, and so there's an awful lot of celebrityness about Barack Obama that attracts younger voters. But if the celebrityness attracts them, and then they listen to what he has to say, and then decide, yes, he really is the lesser of two evils, that is a redeeming factor, I think. Now, a lot of people say, no, condemn both of them across the board, let it go, you know. But young voters are not going to do that. They simply are not. And it's not my place or anyone's place to tell them to do that. These are people who can certainly, they take the time to check the records, look at the literature, and make a decision. They're certainly capable of doing that. And I don't even mean that to sound patronizing. It's not. Anybody can make their own decision if you have the right information. And I'm hoping that the 18 to 39 crowd will take a look at everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. Not just McCain and Obama. You know, there are more than McCain and Obama running for president. There's more out there. There really is more out. There's more out there. Just, you know, check it out. And if you have to strategically decide, okay, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama this time, which will give me a little breathing space. And next time, I'm going to vote for a real liberal or a real Democrat or a real whatever. Okay. Everybody has to strategize. We don't live in a system any longer where strategizing is not necessary. You got to strategize these days, right? Because we all know, of course, let me preface what I'm about to say by saying Dennis Kucinich said, you know, all the people that support me say I can't make it. If all those people would vote for me, I'd make it. Well, you know, you can say the same thing about Cynthia McKinney. You say the same thing about Nader. You say the same thing about Kucinich. You say the same thing about any of these really, truly, honestly, deeply committed Democrats, liberals, that if all the people said no, they don't have a chance, would say, yeah, I think I'll vote for him. Well, never mind. So anyway, as far as McCain and this poll are concerned, interestingly, I got an email from Mike in St. Paul this evening, right before airtime, that pretty much touches on that. Can you stretch for a minute here, Kathy? Okay, let me just share this with you. Mike writes, well, Mike, the polls show John McCain gaining, if not overtaking, Obama. Why? Well, most pundits point to the latest saber-rattling of Russia. Call me crazy, Mike, but if my tinfoil hat tells me that Russia is playing right into the right-wing's plan. The power brokers who are most interested in keeping the right-wing corporatocracy in power here in America gave Georgia a false impression that if they provoked Russia, we would come to their aid. Of course, this was a bluff, which led to the latest conflagration in... Boy, attorneys write big words. Conflagration in Georgia and inevitably has led to McCain overtaking Obama. Everyone knows the foreign policy crisis favors McCain because under educated knuckle-draggers thrive on this stuff. We need John McCain to stand up to those Russians. Just like in high school, when you play a formidable opponent in football, you put the meanest players on the front line. That's the extent of the knowledge and understanding most idiots in this country have of foreign policy. It's like a football game. And we need Coach McCain to put in the really mean guys so we can kick the other team's ass. Problem is, McCain owns 10 houses. He finished in the bottom 5% of his class at Naval Academy. He has crashed 5 naval jets. He's an adulterer who lied about it while in office. He applied for a marriage license for his second wife, Cindy, while still married to his first wife. By the way, his second wife, Cindy, stole prescription drugs from a charity she worked for. But back to him. He was investigated by the Senate Ethics Committee for giving his friend, the criminal Charles Keating, special favors during the SNL crisis. He has been witnessed assaulting a disabled vet in a wheelchair outside his Senate office. He has a horrible temper. He's a spoiled brat. And he's voted time and again for lopsided trade agreements that have screwed the middle class and on and on. But hell, Mike!
He will stand up to them Russians.
Oh, and he'll cut my taxes by a few hundred bucks. Woo-hoo! This is Nova M Radio.
Gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Where was I? I'm suffering from ADD. There is such a thing as adult onset ADD. There really is. I'm not kidding. Oh, yeah, I was reading Mike's email from St. Paul. St. Paul. Moving right along. Yeah, the Obama-McCain poll, that was it. It's just insane to me. It really is. It is totally beyond belief. Jabber, jabber, yadda-da. So let's just leave it there and move over to this one. At Politico.com, there's a quick little note here that Ralph Nader is predicting that Barack Obama at the convention is going to pick Hillary Clinton to be his running mate. Huh? You like that? Oh, God. Nader says, he's not impressed by the supposed finalists to be on Barack Obama's short list. You know, Joe Biden and the rest of them. Nader said, quote, I don't think he's that dumb. He just has to swallow hard and do what JFK did in picking Lyndon Johnson in 1960. He reiterates the smart pick is Hillary Rodham Clinton. Apparently, Nader phoned into Politico on a Tuesday afternoon to offer his prediction that a surprise naming of Hillary Clinton is actually what Obama has in store for this convention. According to Nader's logic, this is what they say at John Harris, writing at Politico.com, says, according to Nader's logic, Obama may dislike Hillary, but will conclude he has no choice but to get over it if he hopes to leave next week's convention in Denver with a unified party and a decent shot against McCain in the fall. Nader says, quote, the polls show 25% of her supporters have not gotten on board. Nader goes on to say he's got to be very concerned by these neck-and-neck polls and by what happened at Saddleback. I guess what Nader refers to there is, the way Barack Obama was sandbagged at Saddleback. Nader says he got beat in Saddleback, big time. Well, maybe so. Nader said he has his own sources, according to John Harris at Politico.com, and to be blunt, they sound a bit sketchy. But they lead him to believe that Clinton remains in serious consideration. Wouldn't that be? That's the end of. You can find it at Politico.com. Nader predicts Obama to pick Clinton. Wouldn't that be a kick in the butt? Huh? After all this. Politics makes strange bedfellows, right? This is from Prairie 2. Mike, the Russians are getting real froggy about the U.S. launching a nuclear first strike, and, well, they should, since we've been building that capability for the last 15 years. Even if you trust McCrazy's handlers to never give him the launch codes, and you trust Putin not to get freaked when they turn on that huge radar set in the Czech Republic and blind the Russian radar, have you ever noticed that Putin talks about his nuclear commanders? These guys have their own keys and don't need codes from the Kremlin to launch, much the same as the officers on a missile sub have that authority in the Russian Navy. Our subs, too, Prairie 2 adds. Most people don't realize that. Yes, Clinton started this madness, and maybe Obama will continue it, and we'll all die. But McCain? The Russians think he's crazy, and they have the KGB files from Hanoi to prove it. It's getting curiouser and curiouser, as Alice said. We'll have some more about the Polish missile crisis. I never thought I would put those three words together in my lifetime. The Polish missile crisis. Oh my God! Shades of 1962. Yeah, here we go again. Is right. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
President Putin, that Russia is a part of Europe.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't
understand. It's about 25 before the hour. So while Ralph Nader is speculating about whether or not Hillary Clinton will be chosen by Barack Obama to be Obama's running mate, the really smart money is on crazy Holy Joe Lieberman. These two, Lieberman and McCain. Wow, wouldn't that make a good? slow down, Mike. Wouldn't that make a nice pairing for the Republican ticket? Wouldn't it drive people nuts? The only problem is that we'll lose, because the Christian crazies, the real fundamentalists in this country, would start eating their own feet. You know, they would feel like they were caught in a leg hold trap, and they would all, you'd see their heads go down while they start chewing on their own ankles to get free of this. McCain and Lieberman? Now, I'm not only becoming ADD, but possibly schizophrenic, because on the one hand, oh, I would love to see that ticket out there, because that would be part of the master plan that is lodged somewhere behind my hypothalamus, which is murder the Republican Party forever. That would do it. But that would mean Barack Obama would be the president. And not that I have anything against Barack Obama. I think he's a nice young man. But if he becomes president, he will be destroyed. There is no question that corporate America, I know that, I know, I've looked at his contribution sheet too, or his FEC thing. I know. But he will be destroyed. And all that fine black hair he has right now, at age 46, 47, a year from now, Snow White. And he's got two young kids, and they don't need to see their father go insane. They just don't. They don't need to see daddy come home or go to the quarters, the living quarters in the White House, and see daddy just sitting there shaking and his eyes darting around inside their sockets. You know, his kids are really sweet. They don't need to see that. So A McCain-Lieberman ticket guarantees that Barack Obama gets into the White House. On the other hand, a McCain-Lieberman ticket means that, like I said, the fundies, the rapture-ready people, the you know, the revelation crowd, the you know, life begins when two little dots connect. That group. No, it begins long before that. I mean, you know, every time a man ejaculates, how many planets, the possible population of planets being flushed into a tissue. You know what I'm saying? Let's not go there. Come on, Malloy. But the Christian fundamentalists, the ones who are supposedly the base of the Republican Party, they instantly implode. Because then they will have this moment of clarity, the sort of thing they're hoping for when they die. That, you know, when they die, there's this moment of clarity. Oh, look, there's, you know, and of course that's not going to happen, but let them believe it. But maybe they'll have that moment of clarity if McCain picks Lieberman. And they'll realize for how long they have been jerked this way, jerked that way, jerked this way, jerked that way, jerked this way, while every single thing that they were told by the Republican Party that was going to happen, that would be wonderful, just wonderful. Yes, yes, we're so close to a theocracy. Yes, thank you, God. You know, that all that stuff the Republicans have been promising to these dunderheads was just that. Nothing. Smoke. Will-o'-the-wisps. Fog. Nothing. An empty box. And that will immediately make the Republicans, the fundies leave the Republican Party forever. There goes their base. And set up their own party, which maybe they can call Taliban. However that translates into American English. Taliban. What would that be? What would that be? Rick Warren. You think? No, not that. I don't know. Whatever. So it is getting to the point now where it's becoming fun again. I have decided to set my panic aside, to set the kind of regurgitating that I go through every day now, like Stephanie Miller talks about, a little bit of vomit, you know, comes floating up into one's mouth, you know, that little bit of acid reflux when you turn on the television and, holy Christ, they're doing it again! They're talking about McCain's war record! Okay. So, getting past that, and thinking about all the insane possibilities here. Can you imagine Holy Joe Lieberman and John McCain on the same stage together? In the first place, if you watch McCain, this guy cannot talk without everything written down in front of him. Have you noticed that? He'll stand there. He's got one of his so-called town hall meetings, and he's got a little podium, you know, down around his waist, and his not notes, his speech is there. Well, my friends, I am not challenging Barack Obama's patriotism. Flip. I am talking about his experience. You know, this is maddening. This is a guy, he can't even give a stump speech. It's probably a poor choice of words with somebody like McCain, stump speech. But anyway, he can't do it. So everything, he reads everything. Can you imagine this? Can you imagine when he would sit down to have a chat with a world leader? Oh, this is great. This is great. If it's not written down for him, you know, he would sit there across from Putin and say, you're not my friend, you son of a bitch. I'm going to bomb you. That's what he would do. He would say that. And you know how Putin would respond. If somebody doesn't write down for him, I'd like to welcome the Russian Prime Minister, my friend. Welcome to this room, which is the Oval Office here in the. This is the White House. Welcome here, Russian Prime Minister. You used to be, didn't you, the president? You know, if it's not written down, McCain is toast. He doesn't even know what county he's in, much less who he's talking to. Lieberman, on the other hand, I came home last night, Hadassah sitting there, and, you know, she's got the, you know, she's got the goddamn gefilte fish again. I hate gefilte fish. You know, I'm sitting there, and she brings out the kreplach. Why can't we just go to a nice Chinese restaurant? I know it's not kosher, but, I can't. And this McCain, you know, so Hadassah says to me, what, are you crazy with this guy, McCain? I don't know. But, you know, after being on the ticket with Kerry, oh, Jesus. You know, at least this time I'm with somebody who's shorter than me. And Hadassah, I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know. She gets frisky, you know, when I've been out with John and Cindy, you know, and I come home and, you know, right away she's wanting to sit on my lap. You know, Jesus, I hate that. But, I don't know. This is, you know, can you imagine the two of them? McCain and Crazy Joe, Holy Joe Lieberman, Crazy John. Ah, wouldn't that be amazing? Now, when we were in Seattle, Hartman said the Democrats have forgotten how to do political theater. I don't know if I agree with that or not, but on the other hand, if the Republicans do this, the political theater available to anyone with eyes would be astonishing. Holy Joe Lieberman. No, John, we're not in Detroit. This is Chicago. Oh, Christ. You know, Hadassah told me not to. My friends, I'm here in Chicago. Thank you, Senator Lieberman. Oh, God, I wish he would shut up. This is beyond bizarre. And can you imagine Hadassah Lieberman and Cindy McCain in the same room together, on the same stage together? Can you imagine that?
Calling Miss Clairol number 27. Ooh, no, I mean number 4. Ooh, no, I mean Miss 27.
So is there any way that, you know, we can kind of transcend the fact that we're all panicked, we're all waiting for the flash of light that used to be one of the key elements in a game I used to play as a kid when I knew that the Russians were going to attack any day now, and the last thing I would see would be a flash of light, you know, before the shockwave. Maybe there's a way to transcend all this and just, you know, pray to the political gods and goddesses that, yes, it's a McCain-Lieberman ticket. We should be so lucky.
And rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
About 10 before the hour, Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who was the first African-American woman elected to the U.S. House from Ohio, died today. She was only 58. Apparently, she had a ruptured brain aneurysm yesterday. She was taken to the hospital and Cleveland Clinic, where she died. She was a Democrat in her fifth term as representative of the 11th Congressional District, which includes most of the east side of Cleveland. And 2 years ago, she was reelected with 83% of the vote. She was considered a liberal, even by me. She was a co-sponsor of legislative efforts to broaden health care coverage for low and middle-income people. She was a sponsor of legislation that would have funded programs supporting the reentry of people convicted of crimes back into their communities and not just, you know, to be left on the streets. She was also the author of legislation that required certification for mortgage brokers and stiffer penalties for predatory loans. Yeah, she was a liberal. And a couple of months ago, she voted against any more financing for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. She said at the time, quote, "I feel it important that we have a plan for a timely redeployment of our troops from Iraq and Afghanistan before we continue funding what has become a seemingly endless war." And it was she, when Congress officially ratified Bush's reelection in January 2005, it was Miss Tubbs Jones, joined by one senator, Barbara Boxer, in initiating a rare, if not historic, challenge to what has normally been a polite, formal ceremony. They were objecting to accepting Ohio's 20 electoral votes for Bush, citing voting irregularities in the state. It was Stephanie Tubbs Jones, the only member of the House, who challenged the Electoral College vote as when it was submitted, along with one senator. The representative needs a senator to do this, and Barbara Boxer, to her everlasting credit, joined Stephanie Tubbs Jones. So as a result of that, you remember that? Instead of holding this little phony-ass courteous joint session to certify the election, the members of the House and the Senate, or the House and the Senate, were forced to retreat to their little separate little chambers for 2 hours of debate. And in the end, the House voted 267 to 31 against Stephanie Tubbs Jones. There were 30 other members of the House who supported her. And in the Senate, the vote was 74 to 1. Barbara Boxer stood alone on that one. So Stephanie Tubbs Jones, liberal Democrat and fifth term representative from Ohio's 11th Congressional District, has died. We have a break coming up here fairly quickly when we come back. Today was the day Warsaw and Washington, two cities, apparently taught each other how to write, I guess, because it's being reported as Warsaw and Washington signed a deal today to deploy a U.S. missile shield in Poland. A missile shield. Isn't it funny? The missile shield consists in part of missiles. Right. You want to know why the Russians are getting a little bit to the point of saying, okay, it's time to just goddamn nuke everybody. Right? You don't think they're getting close to that? They are. The Polish missile crisis of 2008 is on because the U.S. plans to put 10 interceptor missiles in Poland within the next couple of years. So, you know, President Obama can stop this, right? President Obama can stop this. So surely President Obama, when he is sworn in on day four, we talked about what he'll do on day one, two, and three. And on day four, he'll say, oh, by the way, those missile interceptors in Poland are not going to go there. They're not. I don't agree with it. I don't think it's a good thing. And we're not going to do it. I know that John McCrazy would do it, but I'm not going to do it. So, and my vice president, Hillary Clinton, agrees. So that's the end of that. You know he's going to do that on day four, right? But the deal was signed today to deploy this shield in Poland. The shoe lady was over there. She's the one who signed the accord with Poland's foreign minister, Radoslaw Sikorski. And the shoe lady said, this will help us to deal with the new threats of the 21st century of long-range missile threats from countries like Iran and North Korea. That's why we're putting it right next to Russia. The shoe lady sought to fend off the criticism from Russia. You know, the Russians are over there. Yeah, you know, Khrushchev, I remember when Khrushchev banged his shoe on his on the desk at the UN. I remember that scene. It was all over Huntley Brinkley or Walter Cronkite or whatever. But, you know, that shoe banging, you know, he was a clown. He was a big old doofus clown with lots of nuclear weapons who decided he wanted to put missiles in Cuba. But, you know, that shoe pounding on the desk by Khrushchev, That was a clown act. You know, Putin is not going to pound anything. He's just going to say, these guarantees that Poland is now 100% the target of about 70 nuclear missiles. You happy, dumbasses? Huh? Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Thanks for hanging around, huh? You want more? Okay. I don't know. Hadassah just keeps telling me I shouldn't be hanging out with this guy. Yeah. McCain and Holy Joe. Oh, my God. Well, last time he ran with Kerry, this time it's McCain. Who's he going to run with next time? Nader? So the Poles and the Americans have signed the deal. It's a done deal. They inked the contract today. Rice sought to fend off criticism. The European Union is not happy with this, you see. They really are not. NATO be damned. And what is NATO there for anyway? Well, somebody tell me, please. If the Bush crime family continues so for the next 77 days, the way it has been going, I'll have the answer to my question. But NATO? NATO was formed when? 60 years ago? 50 years ago? What, 48? I don't even know. I do know it's over fighting a war in Afghanistan, but NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, North Atlantic, nowhere near Afghanistan. But the shoe lady, who's over there, you know, as well-dressed as she is, and just so delightful, so light on her feet, just so, although she does have big feet, I grant you that, but still, light on her feet, very stylishly dressed, just looking good. The shoe lady always looks good. Even when she gets nonplussed when she's on one of the TV talk shows and somebody doesn't, one of the questioners, one of the show hosts doesn't follow the script, and she gets that look on her face like, when this is over, I'm going to come over and reach down your throat, grab your ass, and turn you inside out. You don't talk to me like, you know, and then all of a sudden you get that feeling like, oh, my God, there's a demon in there. But the shoe lady in Warsaw, I guess it was Warsaw, where she signed the deal with the Polish people today, the Polish president. Was it the president, foreign minister? I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It really doesn't. You know, Poland exists now, but, you know, 3-4 months from now, it's going to be part of Russia again. And then 3-4 years after that, it'll be sucked up by Germany again. You know, Poland is just Poland. It's just kind of like, it's not a real country. It's a sliding thing. Oh, God, I hear the emails coming from Polish Americans. I'm sorry. You know, it used to be a country. Now it's just something that is like on a tectonic plate, and it just goes, zoop, now I'm in Russia, zoop, now I'm in Germany, zoop, now I'm in the Baltics, zoop. So there she is, the shoe lady, to deflect all this criticism, outrage, and nuclear saber-rattling that's coming from the Russians. She said, quote, "It is not aimed in any way at Russia." Oh, really? It's not. If it's a missile defense shield to stop rogue nations like Iran and North Korea from launching terrible things against us, I have a suggestion, shoe lady. Why not place these batteries, the missile batteries and the radar stations, place them in Turkey and Israel? Because, shoe lady, if you look at a map, you'll discover something. That Turkey and Israel's borders are much closer, and therefore we have more time to react if something gets launched from Iran or North Korea, much closer than the Czech Republic and Poland. Poland's almost at the goddamn North Pole! That's why they call it Poland. Pole. Get it? North Poland. Pole. It's way up there in Europe. So her argument, somebody needs to say, Putin, you know, Putin needs to, I don't know, somebody needs to stick something sharp in Putin and make him say something to Condoleezza Rice, like, wouldn't it be better if the missiles were in Turkey? You know, it's just such nonsense. It's craziness. They are trying, the neocons are trying desperately. You want Barack Obama's president? Okay, you got him. Hey, Barack, here. Try some of this. It's called World War III. Go ahead! Give it to McCain. It'll result in a lot of death, I'm sure. Probably a thermonuclear exchange. Maybe you'll survive. Maybe I'll survive. Maybe a few Chinese people will survive. And, you know, God forbid, a few Israelis and a few Palestinians so they can start that all over again. But This is madness, and I realize I'm making no sense tonight. I understand that. How do you make sense out of something like this? It is not in any way aimed at Russia. Not in any way. We are putting 10 interceptor missiles in Poland, plus a radar facility in the Czech Republic, but it's at no way aimed at Russia. No, it's aimed at North Korea. Way over there on the other side of the earth. Jesus, God. Polish President Lech Kaczynski said the deal was a sign of what he called the crucial strategic alliance of Western nations. The crucial strategic alliance of Western nations. As opposed to, who was it that said, wasn't it Bush that said, Russia, part of Europe? This is madness. Kaczynski also said, we have to remember that Western countries have certain values and principles in common. We have to stand up for these principles and we have to defend them. What is he talking about? What are the values and principles? If it's predatory capitalism, which it is, Russia shares that. Russia is as predatory a capitalist state as exists right now. I mean, they really are. They've just taken it to the next level the way the Chinese have, the way Cheney wants to. Any dissension? You disappear. Very simple. This is what we do. This is who we are. We are rich. We make lots of money. Don't argue. Don't dissent. It's the same thing. Russia is us. You know, we're not all Georgians today. Screw that. We're Russians. And the Russians are Chinese, and the Chinese are Poles, and the Poles are Brits. Come on. We have to stand up for the principles, and we have to defend them. Against what? Martians? And then, of course, the Russians view this shield, at least the Russian leadership views this shield, as a security threat designed to undermine Russia's nuclear deterrent. Their nuclear deterrent. Christ. Right. Well, no, the shoe lady says it's to, you know, it's something to do with North Korea and Iran, when in fact it has to do with not Russia's deterrent, but with Russia's attack. You see, Russia's going to attack us. Why are they going to attack us? Because we're going to make them attack us. Why is that? Because we want their oil. Why do we want their, well, you know, it just keeps going and going like that. But the Russians say, well, this undermines our nuclear deterrent. Oh, please. You don't have a nuclear deterrent. You have a nuclear offensive capability that could end life as we know it on three or four planets. You could even get whatever is in that water on Mars. You know, just to unleash everything. Vroom! The whole inner planets of the solar system will just be lifeless for the next, I don't know, till the sun explodes. Moscow views the shield as a security threat designed to undermine Russia's nuclear deterrent. Now, in response to all this, the toy president over there, Dmitry Medvedev, the little puppet, says, we will be forced to respond to this adequately. The European Union and the United States have been warned. End quote. That is Russian puppet Dmitry Medvedev, who, after he said that, his strings were retracted, and he was immediately put back in his box. But there you go. It's a you're in trouble for doing this. I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Get rid of the ABM treaty so we can research and development weapon systems that'll meet the true threat. Let's come together.
Hour. I got an email here from Jesse. He's got two links. One is from Barron's Observer. The other was from Middle East Times. The BarronsObserver.com quickie is the Russian aircraft carrier Admiral Kuznetsov is ready to head from Murmansk toward the Mediterranean and the Syrian port of Tartus. The mission comes after Syrian President Bashar Assad said he is open for a Russian base in the area. You see how this works? Huh? The ship, the Admiral Kuznetsov, is part of the Northern Fleet and Russia's only aircraft carrier. It will head a Navy mission to the area. The mission also will include the missile cruiser Moskva and several submarines. That's according to newsru.com, newsru.com. President Assad, in meetings in Moscow this week, expressed support for Russia's intervention in South Ossetia and Georgia. He also expressed interest in the establishment of Russian missile air defense facilities in Syria. You see how this works? The ship, Admiral Kuznetsov, also last year headed a Navy mission to the Mediterranean. Then on the way from the Kola Peninsula and south, it stopped in the North Sea, where it conducted a Navy training exercise in the immediate vicinity of Norwegian offshore installations.
Oh, God. Yeah, Bashar Assad, he said, oh, thank God you're back in the game. Come on down. Oh, Russian military, come on down. Yeah. So on top of all of this, the Arab leaders, doesn't say who the leaders are, other than we know Syria for sure, are closely and quietly, this is according to the Middle East Times, closely and quietly watching the unfolding conflict between Russia and Georgia while considering the political repercussions on the global scene and the potential impact on the Middle East. The Arab street, meanwhile, is openly backing a resurgent Russia and hopes to see the end of a Washington-centered unipolar world. You see, what we were talking about last night, we had 20 years. We had 20 years to stop the madness between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And we drop-kicked that one, didn't we? Oh, we keep fighting. We love it. We had so much time available to us to incorporate Russia into the 20th century to begin with, but then the 21st. Nah, couldn't do that either. We've had all this time to do good. And what did we do? We did slop. We screwed everything up. We were the ones who, okay, we won, we won, we won the Cold War, our team won, we won, we won. Tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. We won, yay, 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 we won, we won. Now what? Oh, now let's just really screw everything up. And so we did. So anyway, Bashar Assad is now, welcome to the past. We're right back where we started. The situation in the Middle East is now going to become about as tense. You think it's been tense lately? There's been no pushback. Who pushed back against American hegemony in that part of the world? Who pushed back against the Likud party crazy people in Israel? Who pushed back against the American Likudniks? Who has pushed back against the Israeli neocons? There's been no pushback. There's been no balance. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Uh-oh. Here come the bear! And the Arabs are just, you know, like, oh, good. Oh, it's about, hi, Russia. Hello. Welcome back. So Syria is inviting the Russians to build bases. Come on in. Yeah. I know we look like we're just full of sand, but not really. Hell, we had the beginnings of a pretty cool facility up here until the Israelis came to bomb the hell out of it. I'll tell you what, we're not gonna build the facility again because, you know, it'll just look like Syrian and then the Israelis or the Americans or somebody come over and bomb it. You build it, Putin, and put that great big old tricolor Russian flag right on the top. Hell, if you really want to have fun, put the hammer and sickle back up there, right? Let's see if anybody will bomb that. Eh?
Seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt, and for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirt? You will find the bigger piggies up the dirt, always have clean shirts to play around in.
Flew in from Miami Beach, B-U-A-C, been to bed last night on Most of our weapons are de-alerted. They're not alert, however, it doesn't take them long to fire up if we need them.
Fire up.
Our mission is to make sure we never need them on each other.
That's so funny. Make sure we never need them on each other.
No, George. They don't need to. They're not waiting to be fired up, you freak. Oh, never mind. I'm not even going to get involved in that. All right, we want to play something for you. This came from Cindy sent it to us. I guess it's a cut from, was it Crooks and Liars, Kathy? It's on YouTube. We want you to hear this. This is an audio montage of the 2004 Republican National Convention. And it's titled, it comes in a couple of sections. It's titled, How Do You Run a Convention on a Record of Failure? Now, the voices you're going to hear in no particular order are former New York Governor George Pataki, George Bush, Pickles Bush, Dick, Darth Vader Cheney, Rudy Giuliani, DeArnold, and Zigzag Zell Miller. All right, how do you run a convention on a record of failure? This applied in 2004. It's going to apply in 2008. First, invoke 9/11.
In the heart of this great city, we saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. September the 11th. September the 11th. September the 11th.
September 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 11th, 2001.
Second, know your enemy.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam. Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam.
Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam. Saddam.
Saddam.
Saddam.
Saddam.
Saddam.
Saddam Hussein.
Third, handle the Bin Laden matter appropriately. And finally, above all, spread fear.
War and danger.
Continuing danger.
Hour of danger.
Very, very dangerous world.
A grave new threat.
Horrific acts of atrocities.
Murderous regimes.
Dedicating to killing us.
Tyranny and terror.
Slaughtered thousands.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons programs.
The deadliest of weapons.
Terrible weapons.
Nuclear weapons.
Nuclear weapons.
Poison gas.
Torture chambers.
Mass graves.
Deadly technologies.
Radical ideology of hate.
Terror of threats.
Terror.
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 War on terrorism.
War against terrorism. Global war on terror.
Global terrorism.
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 The evil terrorists.
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 Ah, shut up. See how easy that is? Now, not one of those abbreviated clips was repeated. That was from the 2004 Republican National Convention. What do you think is going to be different this time? Remember, first, invoke 9/11. Second, know your enemy. Third, handle the Bin Laden matter appropriately. And fourth, above all, spread fear. Oh, and thanks to Nancy, I said that Lieberman ran with Kerry. And, of course, that's not true. Lieberman ran with Al Gore. He whose name will not be spoken ran with Kerry. All right. The last thing here. Oh, and by the way, if you would like to join in the discussion, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. So this would be a good time to... give us a call, and we will put you on the air. Okay, you want to do that?
Going back one more time to the fact that we have now signed with Poland a deal to put nuclear-tipped missiles in their territory, which, if you look at the map, damn, what's that line? Well, across that line is Russia.
Ugh.
And what's on the other side? Poland.
Oh, that's pretty close.
Yeah, it's even closer than the missiles that Khrushchev tried to put in Cuba. Huh? Remember that?
Sure you do.
Last week, the deputy head of Russia's general staff, Anatoly Nogovitsyn, warned Poland that it was making itself a target, his words, 100%, by participating in this U.S. Missile program. And the president of Poland came back at the Russian in a televised address yesterday saying, quote, our neighbors should now understand that our nation will never give in nor allow itself to be intimidated. Oh, please. Oh, big talk once you get the commitment for those nuclear-tipped missiles, right? Huh? Be careful. Be careful, Polish people. Remember, you only exist because the Russians and the Germans allow you to. Remember that. Sorry. That's just real politic. But anyway, no offense. Don't mean to offend any Polish Americans. So far, no emails from pissed off Polish Americans because possibly they agree. Huh? Anyway, to calm the possibility that maybe the Russians are serious about making Poland 100% a target for nuclear annihilation once the dance begins, Poland has offered now to allow Russian inspections of the missile facilities that we are going to build. Now, there's just one little problem that may come up. There will be several hundred U.S. troops in Poland to, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, service the SHIELD facility and the Patriot missiles.
See, they're going to be missiles there, Patriot missiles, capable of carrying more death than, well, anything that we dropped on Japan a few times over, and then some, plus, up, you know, by a factor of big.
So we're going to have American military there. Now, the Poles have said, okay, look, okay, you can come over and inspect it. Huh. Now, this is on the same day that maybe you saw the pictures in the New York Times today. This is on the same day that Russian soldiers are drag racing through the different parts of Georgia and Ossetia on U.S. Humvees that they captured. Huh? Nice pictures, right? Did you see the pictures? The Georgian soldiers sitting on the U.S. built, owned and operated Humvee with their faces blindfolded, hands behind their backs, and sitting on the U.S. Humvees are Russian soldiers, all of whom are turned away from the camera, but all of whom are fully armed, locked and loaded, and riding around town on American Humvees. Woo! Can you imagine how the Commandant of the United States Marine Corps feels about those pictures? But to calm Moscow's pissed-offedness, the Polish president says, okay, look, once we get this stuff built, you can come over and inspect it.
Inspect it? Okay, thanks.
Now, both of the accords, the one that we just signed with Poland and the one that was signed with the Czech Republic last month, both of these agreements need to be ratified by both the Polish and the Czech parliaments. What about the American parliament? You know, the Senate? Does that... I thought somewhere in the Constitution it said that the Senate has to ratify treaties and agreements. Right around where it said the Senate has to make a declaration of war or... somewhere, I seem to remember that. So, have we ratified an agreement already to put missiles in Poland and radar installations in the Czech Republic
And I don't know, God only knows what we had snuck around to put into Russia. Oh, or, I'm sorry, into Georgia. Oh, and by the way, Ukraine now is starting to feel the air move a little bit as the Russians look at Ukraine as they're continuing to toy with Georgia. The Russians look at Ukraine and saying, did I hear you say something, Ukraine? Sit down. Shut up. What? I hear something coming out of your mouth? You're going to interfere with our fleet on the Black Sea, Ukraine? What? Sit down. Sit. Sit. This is crazy. You know, Kathy plays that song, the lunatics have taken over the asylum. Are you kidding me? It's so far beyond that. So far beyond that.
Washington and Prague sealed the radar deal in July, but both accords must still be ratified by Polish and Czech parliaments. The article does not say by Polish, Czech, and American parliaments. Because, you see, we don't do that anymore.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 10 before the hour to your phone calls. Ray is calling from the Twin Cities. That would be Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Minnesota. Listening to KTNF. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's been a while since we've talked.
Yeah, it has.
But in a nutshell, because the gentleman asked me to keep it short, I'm leaving this country, Michael.
You are?
And I'm putting out the word to anybody in Canada or Scandinavia in particular that if there's any possibility of finding a teaching position in either of those countries, I'm open and I'm ready to go. And I've done this with you before, and I hope you'll let me do it again. I'd like to leave my email. I don't care about privacy issues right now. I just want to get out of here because I think it's over for the time being until the conditions are right for revolution. I've had it with the election. I don't care who's running. It's all BS.
It's
over.
While I don't disagree with the essence of what you're saying, can you do what I suggested earlier tonight, and that is find the very dark, very acidy humor in all of this, and just stay here, because if you stay here, we're going to need teachers as well as people who know how to use other means to reestablish the Republic of the United States of America. So have you really thought this through?
Well, yeah, and in terms of mental health, I really can't, Michael.
Well, I get no argument from me.
Michael, your email is Mike at Mike Malloy.
Mike@MikeMalloy.com.
Okay, I'm going to send you a detailed email, and then maybe we can have a longer conversation, because ultimately I'd like to see this country under indigenous values and ecological values. I don't think the muscle tone is there. The very people we were counting on to make change can't seem to do it. The left can't seem to get its act together. We're stuck with an Uncle Tom and a soldier running for the same office.
I'm curious why you refer to Barack Obama as an Uncle Tom.
Well, because that's what he is, and ironically.
Well, no, I'm just saying. Yeah, it's easy to say. Well, that's what he is, but why do you use that term? Let me finish the question.
Okay.
Just so you know where the question is coming from. Uncle Tom has a pretty heavy duty meaning to it. It's used by both black folk and white folk to really, really, really denigrate a black man. And I'm just wondering why you would use that. How has he identified himself as an Uncle Tom?
Okay, can I answer that respectfully?
Oh, sure. That's why I asked the question. Yeah.
Okay, number one, he panders. He panders to the religious right. He panders to the Israeli lobby. He has gotten his orders from the empire.
Let me just interrupt. Is that the mark of an Uncle Tom, or is that the mark of a man or a woman in the United States who wants to be president? Hillary Clinton has done the same thing. So has John McCain.
I think it's both. I think it's both.
I'm still having trouble here, Ray, with the racial thing. Why? And I'm really challenging you on this. I'm not going to get in a screaming match with you, but I'm really challenging. Why would you refer to him as an Uncle Tom? Because he's doing exactly what Hillary and McCain and Edwards and who else? Damn near everybody except maybe Dennis Kucinich did. You didn't refer to them, I don't think, at least not on this program, as Uncle John's or whatever that. I could.
I mean, again, all of them, Michael, and I don't know if this will satisfy you or not. I'll take my chances, but all of them are pandering. And the reason I'm so hard on Barack Obama is because, ironically enough, this is incredible. He and I both read the same people in graduate school. We both read Frantz Fanon. We both read George Padmore. We both read C.L.R. James. But this man will do anything to get elected. And that's why I'm coming down on him hard.
Well, how does that make him different from any other presidential aspirant?
Well, because very frankly, Michael, and maybe this is naive on my part, I expected better things.
Okay,
from
but you're telling me stuff about you, not him. When you say your expectation was X, Y, or Z,
right,
and since he didn't live up to it, he is an Uncle Tom. That's really illogical. Not only is it illogic, but it's real close to being heavy duty racist. Are you aware of that?
No, I don't mean to be racist, Michael.
Okay,
I know,
but that's what happens to a lot of white folk. They don't realize that they're being racist. There are a lot of ways to bust Barack Obama's chops, and God knows they need to be busted. But by calling him an Uncle Tom, you kind of cut the legs out from your own otherwise well thought out argument.
Can we respectfully disagree then, Michael?
Well, not necessarily on that particular point, Ray. We can't respectfully disagree. No. Because there is no area of respectful disagreement. Really, I'm not trying to power trip you or get weird. And if you want to send me something, go ahead and email it. But, you know, when you apply the same and you can't not do this, you apply the same set of circumstances across the spectrum of three or four or six political candidates, one of whom happens to be of some African descent, and you call that one an Uncle Tom. I don't like that. I don't care for that, Ray. I mean, there are a lot of things to criticize Barack Obama on, and you know, I think you should certainly criticize him. But like a lot of white people, I just don't think you understand, or I should say a lot of Caucasians, I don't think you understand that in saying that, you just take it right up to the to the racist angle, and you, I don't know, play right into the hands of people who do that. Okay, Ray? Sorry our phone call ended like that, but they were your words, pal, not mine.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. Let's go back to your phone calls. Len is calling from New York City, listening on the internet. Len, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Len.
I heard you talking about Lieberman going for Chinese food. You know, we have two kosher Chinese places in our neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, kosher Chinese. I don't know how you do that, but okay.
You leave out the pork.
What about the shrimp?
You leave that out, too. You do. You also make it sweeter, from what I understand. You know, it doesn't taste quite Chinese because they put a little more sugar in the something, corn syrup in the sauces. But you get some good veal meat and chicken.
Oh, yeah?
And a darn good Chinese eggplant.
Okay. Well, then, I have Orthodox friends who wouldn't go near a Chinese restaurant for the obvious reasons.
Right. No, this is kosher, fully kosher, totally kosher.
Well, I don't think we
closed
have
it. Closed on Saturday.
Wait. Oh, well, there you go, then.
And my daughter took the train into Manhattan with a couple of friends. She's only 14 today to go to a kosher Indian restaurant.
I love it.
Well, the funniest thing about that is Jews don't eat Indian food. I mean, there are like three kosher Indian restaurants, I think, in the Western Hemisphere.
Right. Oh, my God. All right, but what you really called about?
What I really called about was, you know, like, I was just so upset. You were talking about Stephanie Tuff Jones before.
Yeah.
And she was such a sweet lady. Like, every time I heard her talk, it was just like a juicy apple you're biting into.
She and funny. So, and funny. She had that kind of humor that so many times when I would hear her talk, not only was she wise, she had a lot of wisdom, but also that humor just cracked me up.
Yeah. And then you referred to Barbara Boxer, who I was listening in on a conference call today because it was for the Jewish committees, Jewish supporters of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But I was too upset to even pay attention because of those polls that came out today.
Yeah.
I mean, just the fact that McCain could actually creep up there, it's unbelievable.
It's astonishing, and I'm getting to the point, and I hate to do this because this is my country, I guess, by virtue of my birth. I'm not talking about from a standpoint of other than it's my emotional home, and but I'm getting to the point where I'm ready and willing to just stand back. I said this a week or so ago. Let McCain have it. Let the whole damn thing collapse until people finally realize that the worst thing that ever happened to this country was the advent of the Republican Party, certainly the modern Republican Party. And if we don't get away from them, they are going to destroy us.
You know, I mean, I heard that, and I've heard you argue it, and I, at the same time, I don't think we can actually I really question whether we can survive the McCain presidency.
Well, I had the caveat I had in there was that there has to be, and I realize this is not going to happen, a veto-proof House and Senate. If there was a president doesn't legislate anything, regardless of what the Bush crime family has tried to do to neuter the legislative branch and make robust, to use their term, the executive branch, the Constitution lays it out very clearly. I mean, Bush can veto, the president can veto, that's the check and balance on an out-of-control Congress, but the Congress can turn around and override. But the president has no legislative authority whatsoever. He can't do anything.
I hear you.
All right, so that's why I'm saying that the caveat is there has to be a veto-proof House and Senate that will of Democrats that will then act like Democrats. They can pass whatever legislation they want and override a veto. If it's too out of control, the legislation passed by the Democrats in a veto-proof House and Senate, one would hope that there will be renegade Democrats who will not sustain the veto, who will sustain the veto and who have second thoughts to say, okay, we made a stupid error there. But that's the only reason I'm talking about McCain, because even though the presidency has no official power other than the power of veto, it is still the focal point
in our system of government. So let the axe fall on another Republican administration. They're the ones that have done the damage. That's my only point here.
Oh, I got you.
Except oh, I know you got me. I'm amazed, though. I go to different threads around and I look at how many people, absolutely screwballs, who heard me go through that whole rant last week and say, well, Malloy's lost it. Malloy's out of his mind. You know, I had to turn him off. I was listening in the car. Ain't going there. He hates Democrats. He's this, he's that. And it astonishes me. Not only how people can misunderstand what the point was.
It's a circus, Mike. I was watching TV last week. Nancy Pelosi was on CNN. I had the sound off listening to you. I wanted to see if anything was happening in the world. So Nancy Pelosi's on CNN, and then I flipped the station over here. It goes from 25 to 26. It's Fox News, and Karl Rove is on. And I wanted to go back to CNN, reach through the goddamn television, squeeze her neck, and say, why the hell isn't he in the basement of the Capitol now, under arrest for contempt of Congress?
Right. Right. I hear you.
But there are two other things I wanted to point out. Biden went to Georgia this past weekend.
Yeah.
I'd like to know he's very quiet on what he came back with. I really want to know what he came back with, because my guess is whatever went down with any of the Bush administration, he got wind of and can break news.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for the stupid circus of VP, text messaging garbage, I mean...
Yeah, what's up with that? Do you have to sign up somewhere and then you get a text message when Obama picks his running mate, or...
I think pretty much any... But the fact that they created this drum roll... I mean, I was a big Biden supporter because I thought he was the only rational old white guy. And, you want to beat a bunch of Republicans, you put out a rational old white guy. And I still think that, he could round up a lot of Catholics, even the ones that, Hillary's, fans are croning for her,
right.
And actually maybe nip this. He could have been on the attack all this while, something's going to happen, energy drinks, I don't know what the hell it's going to take. I mean, apparently Barack said more stuff today. But he's got to look at the number of days on the calendar. He's got to realize, if he has to call McCain a liar 10 times a day, if that's what it takes to win, that's what he's got to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say somebody's a liar when they're a liar and not be mean.
Well, apparently not in this political climate that has been so butchered by the right wing. But as soon as you fight back, they start screaming, oh, see, a partisan politics. Oh, how can you coarsen the American political system? I agree with you. I think Barack Obama ought to stand at least once a day and just stand there and say, McCain is a liar. McCain's an absolute liar. McCain is a liar. And just keep saying it over and over and over again. I'm sure the right-wing media would just crucify him, but the truth is the truth.
Right.
I think
Biden's a great guy to do that, too, and explain it, too. Biden,
well, I hope he does.
He was even able to explain how he voted for the war in Iraq in a way that was totally credible. Nobody remembers that, but he told
right.
Tim Russert, he told Tim Russert, I voted for it because they seem to have done a good job in Afghanistan, and we wanted to get, into Iraq, and I never thought they could botch it the way they did.
Yeah, well.
But,
All right, Len.
Have fun.
All right, thanks for checking in. I appreciate
you.
Appreciate what you had to say. Take care. All right, we got a break coming up here, and then we'll come back and take some more phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Are you bomb or anything? I know that things are different than they were in Daddy's day, but I still believe what makes a man really has a chance. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on. And uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to stand. stand for something or you fall for anything.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Just got a little piece here from Pravda. It's actually it's like a column, editorial piece. Kind of interesting. Listen to this. It's addressed to Bush, and the comparison between Bush's demands about Russia and Georgia and Bush's actions in Iraq. So you have the colossal audacity, Mr. Bush, to warn Russia to pull back. As the wanton, perverse war criminal under whose watch the world saw the crime known as shock and awe committed, I'd say you were well out of your mind to suggest that Russia should pull back. What's a little shock and awe among inferior people we want to rob and destroy, huh? What do human beings need an infrastructure for? Why do they need clean water? Why do they need electricity? What's a little torture? What's a little regime change? Don't recall when that was a goal of yours? What's a little deviant, perverted sexual experimentation and humiliation? What's a few secret detention camps? What's wrong with destroying an environment for 4 billion years and generations after generations of people? After all, they're just ragheads, aren't they, Mr. Bush? Perhaps when Russia even begins to match your tremendous feats of glory, can you speak about pulling back, you fool of the worst kind? You can also tell your number two man to shut up. Cheney said Russian aggression must not go unanswered, and that its continuation would have serious consequences for its relations with the United States. So how do you plan to answer this erroneously termed aggression? He says this will worsen relations with the United States. Buddy, relations with the United States could hardly be any worse than they are now. The United States shows no respect for Russia. The United States shows no respect for any other country weaker than itself, much less a rival as you perceive Russia to be. How about your NATO? Today the West, tomorrow the world, huh? America, uber alles? How about your missile shield breathing down the neck of the Russian nation? There to protect Europe from Iran? The most totally absurd thing that only a moron would believe. How about your deliberate breaking of your agreements regarding Serbia and Kosovo? UN Resolution 1244, which your country agreed to, is the ink dry? You deliberately went against it and recognized Kosovo in total disregard and in violation of that agreement. And you expect your words to be heeded or even listened to? You are joking. It is said when Caligula went mad, he heard laughing. Do you hear people laughing at you, Mr. Bush? Well, there is. See, we Americans do not understand because we are politically naive and abysmally stupid regarding international relations. Not you and not me. You know who I'm talking about. But Americans, for the most part, haven't a clue. Where it concerns the humiliation that the Russians experienced when we talked about this the other night, when the Soviet Union broke apart, we had a golden opportunity, a once in a historical lifetime opportunity to say to the Russians after all this death, you know, we were allies against the Nazis. 50, 60, 70 million died back then. And what happens? As soon as those 70 million, their bodies are not even cold, then we start. Russia and the United States. And then the proxy wars for the next 40, 50 years. There was a chance to sit down and say, look, haven't our two nations, our two alliances caused enough death? Hasn't there been enough violence on this tired planet. And now, after 50 years of threatening each other with nuclear bombs and total annihilation of the planet, isn't there a way to just sit goddamn down and act like rational human beings? Is there no way? We had that opportunity, and we chose not to do that. By we, I mean the leadership. We chose not to do that. Three administrations, spread over 20 years, just said to the Russians, ha, 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 we whipped your ass, now we're going to shove your face in it. Let's everybody poop on the ground and shove the Russians in a face into it. Poop, poop, shove, shove. Brilliant. That's brilliant. I'm not defending anything the Russian war machine or the American war machine or the British war machine or the Israeli war machine or any war machine does. But we had a chance. We, that's right, the winners. The winners. We had a chance. The door was open to accommodation, grace, respect, solving the problems, ending all the madness that had been going on since, I don't know, since when? Since the 30s? And what do we choose to do? You know what we chose to do.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
She makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign of a wave.
It's about 25 before the hour. You know, as things spiral seemingly out of control, although I don't think they're as out of control as folks like I might think, you know, I think all this madness is by design. To what ultimate purpose then? Well, I continue to get emails now and then. Not, you know, I don't mean 20 a day, but I certainly mean more than one or two a day. Like this one from Terry. Mike, I'm listening to you tonight. I am firmly convinced that this administration is working night and day to create an emergency requiring the president to either set aside the results of the November election or postpone the election, saying that the situation in the world negates the possibility of the transfer of power. I'm almost convinced that this criminal administration is orchestrating a monumental catastrophe sometime between now and January 20th, 2009, that will give the president the impetus to invoke Executive Directive 51, suspending any transfer of power into the foreseeable future. And it's signed Terry. Now, we all know what Directive 51 is all about, that by the executive's definition, in this case, that executive is George W. Bush. By his definition, not Congress, not the Supreme Court, but the executive's decision that a situation has arisen in this country that constitutes a national emergency to a degree determined by the executive. You see, the executive gets to decide whether or not there is a national emergency and whether or not the degree of the national emergency is such that it requires the suspension of damn near everything except or and then the imposition of martial law, yada, yada, yada. That is hanging there. It's there. And because this cowardly, filthy, Democratic Party-controlled Congress allowed this to occur. This is another reason that Democrats just turn my stomach. The ones in Congress just absolutely turn my stomach. They could have stopped this. They could have stopped it. But they didn't. Okay. So we're stuck with Presidential Directive 51. And like I say, every once in a while, I get the emails from people who are looking beyond the day-to-day distractions like an invasion of Ossetia by the Georgian military or, the moving of more U.S. naval power into the Persian Gulf or the arrival of a Russian aircraft carrier in the Black Sea swinging around the Mediterranean heading towards Syria. Beyond that, and whether or not you're going to get your text message when Barack Obama or the half-wit picks a running mate, beyond that, hanging out there is Presidential Directive 51. I don't think about it because there's a part of me that says, no, they wouldn't do that. And then another part of me, this is why I become schizophrenic, another part of me says, well, if they wouldn't do it, why is it available to do? If nobody's going to invoke Presidential Directive 51, why is it there?
Well, what if we have an emergency?
There's enough emergency powers already available before Directive 51 was ever even conceived, Michael.
But,
no buts. Why is it there if it's not going to be used, or if there's no plan to use it? And see, that's where the dialogue breaks down, and I realize, son of a bitch, you're talking to yourself and carrying on a pretty good argument, as if there was somebody really in your head besides you. Ah! Back to your phone calls. Jim is calling from Atwater Village, California, listening on KTLK. Jim, welcome to the program.
Howdy, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Great. Geez, oh, peace. There's the exact reason. I mean, you've been kind of dissed on Randy Rhodes and such because you have, said, vote for McCain, as some of your callers. I love you. I think you're the bravest guy on radio. Honestly, the Bush crime family, no one speaks words like that on the radio. But that is why we need a Democratic president, period. And also, one of your callers said, if we had two-thirds majority in the House and the Senate, we could get rid of the Republican Party.
Well, I've said that, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's do that, and let's get rid of Executive Directive 51. And that's the reason McCain can't be in power, because even if he were elected and we had the majority in the House and Senate, he would. You know how nuts he is, he would.
Well, I don't think we're yet at the point where we're utterly hopeless or helpless, I should say. And by we, I mean the legislative branch. I don't know the history of presidential directives and how they would hold up in court. I do know that if somebody were to write a presidential directive, say a President McCain, that the Congress didn't like, I would think that the Congress could immediately challenge it by what? Passing legislation that denied that power to the president, in which case then it would go to the Supreme Court, the third branch of government, to decide whether or not the executive branch has the power to negate the legislative branch. You see, it's like a dog chasing its tail, but it's a necessary chase. As far as electing a Democrat to the executive branch, I come back to what I've been saying. Why? Why do that? Why especially take someone who whether, we all agree with him, to whatever degree we agree or disagree with Barack Obama, he is an interesting young a political comer. So why throw him into this this, I don't know how to describe it without being knocked off the air because of bad language. Let's just call it a situation. The situation the Bush crime family has manufactured. Why? Barack Obama is not going to, well, what's he going to do? What the hell is he going to do? Is he going to inspire the House and the Senate? What happens if the sick, degenerate electorate in this country says, well, okay, we'll make Barack Obama president, but boy, we sure like to have a division of power, so we're gonna give the Congress back to the Republicans. And so the game goes on. No. I'm sorry. I'm going to stick to it. I really am, even though, I read the blogs, I read the... the people don't have a goddamn clue as to what I'm saying. And that's okay, because, just because you're a blogger doesn't mean, or you write on a thread somewhere, doesn't mean you have any more sense than the average fire plug. It doesn't mean a damn thing. It really doesn't. But I'm going to stick to the story that what we ought to have, in order to end the madness for once and for all, veto-proof, Democratic Party-controlled House and Senate, and give it to McCain. Give it to the son of a bitch. Give it to him. I'll bet you won't last a year, but he'll have a massive coronary or a triple stroke. I mean, his brain will explode in three places. Boom. Just blow that pocket of pus right out his cheek. Boom. From the stress. Are you kidding me? But no. Nuh-uh. The Democrats out there, the ones who are, the Obama supporters.
Goddamn Malloy! Goddamn Malloy! Boy, he's doing it again, isn't he? He's a Republican.
Oh, bite me. If you don't get it, if you don't understand, moron, go ahead. Do whatever you do. Go ahead. Keep it going. Keep it going. Remember what insanity is, though. A workable definition is doing the same thing over and over and over, election after election after election, and expecting a different outcome. Huh? Right? Keep doing it, booby! Go ahead! And you call me crazy? Okay. People just don't understand for some reason. Americans don't seem to understand how mashed up our institutions have become, our society has become, our financial network has become, everything, our military, everything, the environment, everything has just been mashed by these bastards. And now you want to give it to Barack Obama. Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Give it to Barack. He'll fix it. Besides, if you don't think he'll fix it, Malloy, you don't know your history. Look at FDR. FDR fixed it. He didn't come into office as a fixer. He got to be a fixer when he got into office. He was a rich man, rich white man. Smoke cigarettes in a holder. Yada, 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 yada. Okay. Then go ahead. Just do it. About 10 before the hour.
Thanks to everybody who participated in the program tonight, however you did that, especially Ian Hopp, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, Catherine Bay, and you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Back to the phone calls. Mark is calling from Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's kind of, well, rickety.
Yeah, it was a pleasure meeting you. I met you a few years ago at Dead Hawks here in Madison, and it was a...
Well, the coldest day of the year or something, if I remember.
Yeah, right. I can't remember if that was a cold day or... It's been a while ago now, but you're absolutely right on the Congress having to approve those treaties. I mean, that's... You know, I pulled up the Constitution once again and looked at it, and it said, you know, 2/3 of the Congress has got to approve that stuff. And
well, how is it being handled? I mean, have these two agreements with the Czech Republic and Poland already been approved? Is this something that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi slipped under the radar? And I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know either. It's just another one of these little Bushisms that. You know, executive orders and all the stuff that I have never, I'm just kind of baffled how it happens, because there's nothing in the Constitution that says signing statements exist or executive orders or...
Right. The governing style of the Bush crime family is absolutely counter to this Democratic Republic's founding documents. Has nothing whatsoever. The Bush crime family's method of running the country is more in line with the German high command's method of running Germany back in the 30s. It's almost identical.
It's autocracy. I mean, it's just in the pure greed of at all levels that you see going on. I don't know if you that Lee Rayburn picked up on this for us. We had a friend of mine Barbara worked with some of the FEMA people that were here for the flooding that happened here in Wisconsin this summer.
Uh-huh.
And those FEMA workers came in from Puerto Rico. They got the news while they were here servicing people who were suffered the flood damage. They're getting laid off when they're getting back home via a teleconference.
Yeah.
So that and apparently one of the guys that might have been involved in this decision was one Monty LeMay, LeMaire, who actually owns a call center.
Right.
And it just and one has to wonder if he's going to be awarding the contract to himself.
The privatization of everything, which is a hallmark of corporatism / fascism, it's just been running rampant.
And now Florida's getting whacked with flooding now, and so they're going to be calling upon FEMA, I suppose, to do it. And are they even going to have the people there to do it anymore? Are they going to call in the contractors and pay them, you know, half of what they're paying the people that actually worked for FEMA and knew what they were doing?
Oh yeah. Oh, listen. This is disaster capitalism.
Oh,
Naomi
right.
Klein has written so much about. These are sharks feeding on dead carcasses, figuratively speaking. These are people who truly, in a different society, a different time, different place, China, people who would be attacking their own country the way these predatory bastards are attacking the United States. If this were China, they would be given a quick trial, taken out behind the courtyard, and a bullet put in the backs of all their heads, and then they're finished with it. And the example is there. If you are going to screw over your fellow citizens in the state, we will execute you as quickly as we can. Now, I'm not saying that the Chinese method is good. I'm saying that maybe there should be some sort of adoption of rules, laws that say when it gets this out of control, when people are dying, when countries are being destabilized, when militaries are being broken, when the foreign countries are being salted with depleted uranium, when our own economy is being destroyed, maybe, just maybe, there should be some provision where the people who are responsible are given a trial and then whatever the law calls for afterward. Now, I realize the Constitution calls for impeachment, but that is off the table.
You don't think they're all carrying around a little piece of paper in their pocket, signed by Bush, going, "This is by my orders that the bearer of this paper has done what he has just done." And that's out of the Three Musketeers, that, you know, the thing that D'Artagnan showed to Richelieu that he had signed when for a pre-pardon for all their crimes.
I'm not familiar with that, but I'll take your word for it. It sounds like something D'Artagnan would do.
And it's something Richelieu wrote, and he intercepted the letter and was saying that, you know, to avoid what Richelieu was going to do to him. But, I mean, it just, I don't know if Bush can pardon people for crimes they haven't been convicted of or accused
right,
of. Or,
right. Well, of course.
It's just offenses that it says, Karl Rove is pardoned for whatever he did.
Yeah, isn't that
do
nice?
Do they have to get specific, or can he just say, Rove is free, you know, that...
I just
don't know. I mean, that's...
I don't either. Mark, Mark, I'm out of time. I got to leave there. Mark, I love it when you call. Thank you very much. Now you're going to make me look up, dig around in my old. Do I still have Three Musketeers and the Count of Monte Cristo and all that stuff, Kathy? Do I have it over there on the bookshelf? Got to look up and see what D'Artagnan did with Cardinal Richelieu. That you know. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate your hanging out tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Do take care. And keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.